You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. From the power of our memory and our history, with high hopes for the days that lie ahead, we gather today to shape the destiny we share with one another. We gather with faith in the practice of democracy. We gather with hearts and minds open, open to the wisdom in every voice among us. In our gathering, may we dream and design a bold future. May we bring our best selves to this service, and may we dream these dreams and do this work with love. So may it be. Well, good morning and welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it means to serve you, and it's worship because it raises to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you here on behalf of generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path. Any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. You are invited to kick on with us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. But now let's join together in singing our opening hymn, We Gather Together. Please stand as you're able. Well, as you'd know, it's our tradition to share recent events on our spiritual journeys in an open forum of fellowship. This is an act of trust that helps us bind our fellowship more closely together and makes this place truly sacred. So if you have had a recent event that's been significant on your spiritual journey like these, you can share it by coming up, lighting a candle, and telling us as briefly as possible about it. As some things lie too deep for words, you are also welcome to light a candle in silence. But whether you choose to come up or not, you can take part in expanding our circle of compassion by finally listening with an open heart and mind, and by refraining from comment. I now open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity.
John Wolfe, the minister emeritus of a UU church in Tulsa, once wrote, there is only one reason for joining a Unitarian Universalist church, and that is to support it. You want to support it because it stands against superstition and fear, because this church points to what is noblest and best in human life, because it is open to women and men of whatever race, creed, colour, place of origin, or sexual orientation. You want to support a Unitarian Universalist church because it has a free pulpit, because you can hear ideas expressed there which would cost any other minister his or her job. You want to support it because it is a place where children come without being saddled with guilt or terrified of some celestial peeping Tom, where they can learn that religion is for joy, for comfort, for gratitude and love. You want to support it because it is a place where the walls between people are torn down rather than built up. Because it is a place for the religious displaced persons of our time, the refugees from mixed marriages, the unwanted free thinkers, and those who insist against orthodoxy that they must work out their own beliefs. You want to support a Unitarian Universalist Church because it is more concerned with human beings than with dogmas, because it searches for the holy rather than dwelling upon the depraved, because it calls no one a sinner yet knows how deep is the struggle in each person's breast and how great is the hunger for what is good. You want to support a Unitarian Universalist Church because it can laugh, because it stands for something in a day when religion is still more concerned with platitudes than with prejudice and war. You want to support it not because it buys you some of the insurance policy towards your funeral service, because it insults neither your intelligence nor your conscience, and because it calls you to worship what is truly worthy of your sacrifice. There is only one reason for joining a Unitarian Universalist Church: to support it.
Thank you, John. It's a custom when we have our annual AGM that the service proceeding should be shorter to allow time for this important annual meeting that follows, where we do things like elect new officers and decide on a few key agenda items. And that reading John just gave pretty much sums up why you should consider having an actual membership and getting involved in the AGM for the practical and necessary support of this church. You may have noticed that each sentence in that reading is what's called an imperative sentence. It begins with you want to. Even when you is only implied, it's an imperative. Not someone else. You just do it. You should want to. You should want to, the reading says. And each sentence gives you a reason to want to support a Unitarian church. Not someone else. You. And not just join or attend, support. Because it's easy in our weekly gatherings like this to forget that this collective church effort is really only made possible by those who've taken that you to mean themselves. Now, I understand it's easy to feel detached, though. The center of gravity of our services is a live bit of oratory like a TED Talk, surrounded and supported by a musical performance, so it would be easy to get the feeling that this is all some sort of spectator event, an entertainment like live television in which your role is just to sit back and let it wash over you like a warm tide. But actually nothing could be further from the truth. Intentional communities like this are kept afloat by the voluntary work of its members and are thus actually incredibly fragile things. They can easily sink. And when they sink, and they do so with astonishing speed. And this is always less to do with numbers of people or the quality of the service than a lack of volunteers taking responsibility for keeping the organization afloat. Because what you value, you care for, right? And if you aren't helping to care for something, then you probably don't really value it, or you probably believe its buoyancy is secure. But in the 21st century, no church's future is guaranteed, even those with considerable historical prominence. Our Unitarian churches are independent and self-governed, with no large and remote hierarchical exostructure to keep us buoyant by channeling us personnel and money. So our thin congregational polity, outlined here, while certainly a strength, this thinness also makes Unitarian churches all the more fragile. And now, a thinly veiled metaphor about, oh crud, our boat is sinking, we are in great peril indeed. We're going to be okay, everyone, just get into this life raft. Is this the only life raft we've got? Yes, but it's big enough for all of us. It looks uncomfortable. I don't like the color. Guys, that's not important right now. Our boat is sinking. I don't feel like getting in a raft today. Don't you have a raft we'd like better? Look, this is serious. If we don't get in the raft, we all drown. But what if we don't like either of those options? I'm not feeling this rescue. I know, to protest our unsatisfactory choices, let's untie the raft and let it go. No, wait, don't. Yeah, do it. You do realize that was our only raft. Yes, but we feel that a raft should offer more than just survival. Sorry, guys, I think we're screwed. You should have given us a more inspiring raft. This is all your fault. Those of you that have been involved in voluntary organizations, does this ring a little true for any of you? So what's the difference between a sinking church and a cruising church? Now, you all might have an opinion, but it helps to have some actual knowledge. And one of the things you retain a professional minister for is that they are the sort of person who weirdly is interested in and studies up on such questions so you don't have to. One such area of church knowledge is called ecclesiology and is a social science concerned with the psychosocial dynamics of congregations. Now, because it's a social science, it deals in tendencies and probabilities. But like any other social science, material is peer-reviewed, theoretically consistent, and rigorously analyzed in order to be judged sound. So, what does the latest sound ecclesiology say about how you keep these ships afloat? Well, it comes down, finally, to certain key attitudes of those who do get involved. Now, attitude may not be everything, but attitude counts for a lot. Maybe the biggest difference between a struggling church and a thriving church is around what's possible. Thriving churches believe they can. Declining churches believe they can't. And in the words of Henry Ford, whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right. Leadership groups can come up with 20 ways to make things happen or 20 reasons why they can't. And that is a choice that tells you far more about your church than you probably want it to. And even if leaders can do something and try to do something and they're wrong, at least they tried. They consider the mission of the church important enough to take some risks. 2. Struggling churches focus on themselves. Thriving churches focus on the people they're trying to reach. If our conversations are all about the needs and wants of our members, it's a sign our church is insider-focused. But the core mission of anything calling itself a church is, though, to reach out to the world. Thriving churches not only know that, they live it. Besides, who likes to hang out with selfish people? Ironically, the selfish always end up alone because a life devoted to pleasing only yourself ultimately leaves you alone. This is also true for selfish churches. Thriving churches are outward focused on others. Sinking churches focus on members' preferences. Todd didn't like the music. Allison thinks we're not intellectual enough. Bill wants to start a new program, and so the leaders scramble to please everybody. In reality, sinking churches bend to the preferences of their members. Thriving churches do not. Instead, they focus on the principles that will help them reach new people out there and develop strategies. Thriving churches are proactive. They choose their agenda and get on with issues that can impact their future. Struggling churches are reactive, letting members determine the agenda and reacting to problems ad hoc like spot fires. You can get so busy reacting to problems other people raise that you never get around to charting a course for the future. And if you never get around to charting a course for the future, you're going to have no future. Thriving churches set their own agendas, not in the selfish sense, but in a way that determined leaders see what the mission requires and decide to enact it. Leaders in a thriving church simply don't entertain other agendas that would throw them off mission. As a result, they're more effective. And finally, thriving churches act, and they act now. Sinking churches don't. They don't actually say they won't act, but they say they'll get to it eventually or someday or when the time is right, which, as you know, means never. But if you want to be effective, you act. If you want to be ineffective, you don't. And talk without action has little value, and too many churches specialize in talk. In addition, too many church teams meet just for the sake of meeting. If you can't remember the last time you made a major decision in a meeting that changed the course of your church, you're wasting your time. If you talk about the same issues meeting after meeting with no resolution, that's not leading, That's standing still. If you're not going to act, strike the item off the agenda, move on. If you're going to act, act, and act now. Just make a decision and move on with it. Not get stuck in limbo, believing the lie that talking about things solves things. Nah. Action produces traction, so act. Now, I'm sorry if all that's a little blunt, but there's no word of a lie in it. And it again sums up a few basic truths from people who studied a broad range of churches in some depth. So back to where I began this talk. Which of these is you? If you're one of the ones who've been bailing for a while, chances are you're getting fed up with a lot of members sitting around enjoying the benefits. The way to manage these feelings of being fed up is not to go all passive-aggressive and stop bailing, because that'll show them. Better might be to encourage other people to help. If you're enjoying the cruise, why not make sure the boat is afloat for others who will need its buoyancy someday? And if you're not prepared to bail or to cruise, then you're still welcome to come along with us, of course. But any critique you offer, however well-intentioned, about the boat or how it's run, might not be given the same weight. Understanding these things is imperative, not because, like an imperative sentence, not because we're sinking, because we are not. By any metric, we are a spiritually healthy church. But because, given the thinness of our polity structure, we are only ever one or two bad decisions away from running on the same rocks that have seen in the last decade four churches close for every one that's opened. Think about that. That's a real statistic. If this church is important to you, get involved to whatever extent and in whatever way you can, and only very, very seldom does that mean no involvement at all. Now, it doesn't have to be a big involvement that cripples you or your social life. It doesn't have to be a big involvement to affect the cruisability of the church. Little things can have big impacts, like a trim tab. Do you know what a trim tab is? When they began to design big container ships were hard to steer. The rudder was huge and took forever to get the ship out of harm's way. But then some bright spark developed that little thing on the end called a trim tab. They also work in aeronautics as well as boats. It's a small rudder attached to the big rudder. And that small rudder radically affects the turning power of the rudder. Little actions can have large effects if well positioned. Do you know who invented the trim tab? Buckminster Fuller, architect, designer, inventor of the geodesic dome, and a Unitarian, and the son of a Unitarian minister. So do not tell me individual Unitarians are by nature ineffectual. Little actions in churches, as in boats, can mean the difference between whether we sink or continue this journey together. Amen. Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.